This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 267.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast, everybody. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
And tired.
And tired. You're always tired, though. I mean, that's not anything new.
I'm extra tired. It's been a long weekend. I'm a good tired, but I'm tired.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, I want to welcome everybody to the Family Gamers Podcast this week. It is an odd-numbered episode. We have a guest this week, but we are going to do Beyond Board Gaming this week. So
Beyond Board Gaming.
We have a special guest, second half of the show. You may remember we have done this before. We try to have a guest on who has something to do with families in some way, but maybe is outside of board gaming. And we had an author on, and we had a world-renowned TikTok organist on. And this week on the show, we have Chris Ronan, who is a PR manager for geocaching.com.
Yeah, and geocaching is cool, but it is not a board game. And so we're going to talk about that in the second half of the show.
Yeah, it's something we've started to get into this year, and we're really having a lot of fun with it. And we think that you might have fun with it, too, if you don't know what it is. So definitely make sure that you pay attention to the second half of the show. You'll learn all about this free thing called geocaching.
But first, give me a fact.
Okay, I will. This week's fact, it's just after Halloween, which means it's now November. Our kids brought home approximately 267 pounds of candy.
No, that is not a true fact.
That is not our fact at all. It's Thanksgiving month, and what do you think of, Anitra, when you think of Thanksgiving?
Turkeys?
Turkey. I mean, we're supposed to think about all these things that we want to give thanks for and all the things that we are thankful for, and that's all good, and we should give thanks for those things, and it is a wonderful time of reflection, although we should be reflecting all year long. We shouldn't be waiting for Turkey Day to do it, but whatever.
Yes.
But it's
also
turkey.
It's cold outside.
Yeah, it's let's be honest. Did you know that Americans buy approximately 267 million turkeys per year?
That's a lot of turkeys.
Yeah. 45 million whole turkeys purchased for Thanksgiving. But turkey is like the healthier substitute meat for like everything. And
yeah,
so over the course of the year,
if you want to eat red meat but shouldn't eat red meat, then you eat turkey.
Kind of. But you just think of things like turkey sausage, turkey meatballs, turkey bacon, turkey this, turkey that, whatever. 267 million turkeys a year are gobbled up.
Slaughtered in the name of providing us with food.
They're gobbled up.
Yes.
You're just ignoring my joke.
Your pun's better.
Rude. Anyway, another fact is that the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
So recently a listener asked about how to balance financial priorities now versus once down the road, like college savings or retirement. First and foremost, you want a stable foundation, which means an adequate emergency fund and a manageable level of debt. Once that's taken care of, consider the priorities and costs of each goal. Ask yourself if you had to pick a more stable retirement for yourself or a better university for your children, which is the priority. Then start saving towards your top priorities, giving the most attention to the top one or two, but still putting a little bit into the other goal. The trick is to get to a point where you're saving some for the near future, some for the midterm, and some for the long term. You don't want to put all your savings toward long-term goals and not have any fun along the way. And at the same time, you need to have something saved for retirement. Otherwise, you'll have to live off whatever Social Security that you get, which won't leave much room for fun in the future. If you want to talk to an expert about prioritizing your goals and saving for the future, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to set up a meeting.
All right. Thanks so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show. So here's what we're going to do. So Anitra, you are a good kind of tired. Why?
Because I am freshly back from QsCon, which was a very cute small con in Central New York this past weekend.
And you got to meet some people that we've had on the show before. Well, I guess one person you knew and one person that you got to meet for the first time.
Yeah, I met up with Mark Spector, a good friend of the Family Gamers. Mm-hmm. And I also got to meet Katya Howitzin in person.
Yay. Which was great. Did you play a game with Katya at least?
Does Board Game Trivia count?
I guess so.
She was helping run the registration table every day out of the days of the con.
Oh, wow.
So she was really only playing games like after 8 or 9 p.m.
I see. And since you were there with our 10-year-old, that was probably not a time that you were playing a whole lot of games.
I mean, there was at least one or two times I was playing games that late. But
so much for the responsible mom on the trip.
He got plenty of sleep.
So you played games all weekend.
Yes.
Well, I was slaving away at home trying to keep our other two children alive.
If you have to slave away to make sure that they're staying alive, you're doing it wrong.
But you got lots more game playing in than I did in the last week. I guess that's what I'm trying to get to kind of ingest. So I have literally one game on my list, and you did not play this game.
Yes, I would like to hear about
it. So I will talk about this game, but you played a bajillion games. So we're going to limit you to like five. And if there's more that you feel like you really want to talk about, we can talk about those next week.
All right.
Deal?
Deal.
All right.
I think I will this week try to talk about the ones that I was the most like surprised by, or, you know, not ones that I ended up getting to bring home with me or things like that.
Okay, sure.
So.
Sure. All right. Let's get started.
Okay. Super quick one. As the convention was starting up and there were not a lot of people there yet, I was feeling like I still needed to be in homeschool mom hat for a little while. So I picked out 10 Days in Africa to play with Asher.
Sure. So it's kind of like 10 Days in the
USA.
It is
exactly the same mechanics as 10 Days in the USA.
Okay.
But with a map of Africa, which means that it's a lot less balanced looking than the 50 states of the United States. Because mm-hmm. some African countries are huge.
Right.
And some are really tiny. They get around some of this by a couple of the really, really big countries actually have multiple cards in the deck.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of cool. And they've got a little symbol on the map to show you that. But it was fun, and it certainly got us both engaging our brains a little bit more because neither one of us is as familiar with African geography.
Cool. So you learned something from it as well.
I did.
Awesome. All right.
I also got to learn the Artemis Project from its designer.
That is cool.
Yeah. And Daniel, the co-designer, is a really cool guy. Mm-hmm. So I played a bunch of other games over the weekend with him too. But,
oh, okay, sure.
But I learned the Artemis Project from him, and it was neat. And I think it's probably not quite the right fit for our family. It's a little heavier than we usually tend.
Which means it probably suits me extremely well.
Oh, you would enjoy it. Asher enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Right.
But it's just we have enough games of that weight right now that already don't get played. I know.
I mean, I know.
I mean, I know. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I played a couple of games that I've been wanting to play for a long time, and this gave me an opportunity to.
Right. That's what cons are for.
That's one of the big purposes of cons.
Yeah.
So, like, Forbidden Sky. You've played it before.
I have.
We have, or at least used to have a copy. I think we still have it. It's up there. All right. I've never played it.
Uh-huh.
Now I've played it.
Uh-huh.
I'm really glad I've played it.
Good. I'm glad that you played it. I think you said you probably never need to play it again.
I don't think I ever need to play it again. It's so fiddly, so much more so than Forbidden Desert or Forbidden Island.
Yeah. You have to physically complete the circuit, which is cool, but obnoxious.
Yes. And on top of being more fiddly, that you have to physically complete this circuit with magnetic metal pieces, it's also way easier to die.
Yes.
So it is a much harder
game. You
can game
just randomly get electrocuted. Thanks.
Like,
for nothing,
you happen
cards.
To be connected by a wire to a lightning rod somewhere. Mm-hmm. Therefore, when lightning strikes, you get hit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the wind's blowing and it blew you off the edge. So now you lose some rope.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take too many of those before somebody dies.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You can die pretty easily in that game.
So we were fairly close to completing our rocket when somebody died. And therefore,
you lose.
We fail.
Yep.
But it was good. And I'm glad that I've played it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of cooperative games, I think it is the appropriate time for me to butt into your legendary list of gaming.
All right. Tell me about the game you played.
So the day that you left, we got a package from Skybound Games, and it was an influencer pack of Kim Joy's Magic Bakery. And it had some very adorable stuff in it. Claire has a new cooking apron.
Oh.
And it's very cute. There are some stickers. There is some really nice stuff in the box. And perhaps most importantly, there was a copy of the game, Kim Joy's Magic Bakery.
Okay.
So Kim Joy's Magic Bakery is a cooperative baking game where you are trying to serve customers. So you can almost think of something kind of like an Overcooked or something like
sure.
where you have components, you can draw components, draft components, and those components are used to make ingredients. So like you would mix, you would have a fruit and a sugar in your hand, you would discard them and pick up a jam card, right? And then jam would be an ingredient in whatever it is that you need to make.
A cake or a filled cookie, or
whatever it is. And those things, you have to make those things to satisfy customers.
Okay.
And the game, the fundamentals of the game are incredibly simple. You have three actions on your turn, or at least in our two-player game, you have three actions. Maybe it's different when you have more players. I'm not sure. But you can pick up a card. You can give a card to someone else. You can mix cards together to make another thing, or you can use those some of those other things to make whatever you need to satisfy a customer.
Okay.
That's it. Those are the things that you can do in your three actions. And so you're going back and forth, and you're trying to make these things satisfy these customers. You go, everybody goes, and then the customers kind of shift sort of like on a conveyor belt kind of thing. You can have three customers out at a time. If there's a gap, then the ones after the gap don't move as the gaps fill in, right? But the if you have three customers out and a fourth customer would come out, the customer on the right side would kind of fall off. So you always have the oldest customer
becomes like a dissatisfied, becomes angry a dissatisfied customer. Sure.
Exactly. The way that we played the game, you can kind of play this like freehand, air quote, where you're just trying to satisfy customers. You go through the customer deck, and then however many customers you satisfied over the course of the game is your score.
Okay.
But there's also a 10 scenario like campaign in the box.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is really cute. And we did the first scenario when we played. One of the things that kind of is a slight tweak on this is that when you create the thing that is for the customer, like when you create the final thing to complete an order, sometimes you have the option to garnish it. So let's say you make a cake, and if you also include the chocolate ingredient, you garnish the cake with chocolate, right?
Oh, okay.
In this first scenario that we did, there was a cat that comes in. I'm very mild spoilers for the first scenario in Kim Joy's Magic Bakery. A cat comes in. There's a slight narrative here. And the cat is laying on the counter, right? That's okay. The narrative. And what you do is you take the cat card and you actually turn it sideways and you put it over two of the mixed, I don't remember what they're called, the not the base ingredients, but the actual mixed thing. So like the jam or the sponge cake or the whatever. Like, and so you can also, in addition to using an action to pick up a card, to hand a card off to someone, etc., you can use an action to move the cat in one direction or the other. So that, you know, if it's covering, say there's three items, it's covering items two and three, you can move it over so it's covering items one and two.
Okay.
Right. If you garnish something that calls for a garnish, you can move the cat more than just the one.
Oh, okay.
For free as part of that completed order with garnish. And that's it. And basically on the bottom of the card, it says, you know, if you satisfy five customers, you complete this scenario with a like gold medal. And if you satisfy four, it's a silver medal. Three, it's, okay, you know. And so, okay. So there's nothing that's preventing you from playing it like a mission in Angry Birds and being like, you know what, I think we can do better next time.
Right,
we're not
gonna,
you know, mark this as a completed scenario. And there's no actual, I think there's stars that you fill out in like some book or something, but we're not gonna do that because we'll do legacy things if it's necessary. I don't really feel like this is necessary. But anyway, the point is, so you can keep playing them if you want to. It's very cute. It was laid back. Our 13-year-old actually seemed to enjoy it.
A big plus.
Which, I mean, is an auto win right there, right? So that's Kim Joy's Magic Bakery from Skybound Games. This game is super cute. It's very laid back. It's not a competitive game, so everybody's kind of working together.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, yeah, you kind of, you like the glory. It reminded me a little bit in some ways of Rescuing Robin Hood, in the sense that, like, yeah, you like the glory of being the one who completes the thing, but ultimately the goal is to get the things completed. So I don't really care if I've, you know, take two of my actions to pick something up and hand it to you so that you don't have to use those two actions. So you can use your two actions to mix the things together and to complete the order. You know what I mean? So It really does help with that collaborative kind of nature. It says you're not supposed to show each other your cards, But it also says that you can tell people what you have. Okay. So like there's no secret, but it's you're not playing open-handed.
Sure, sure, sure.
I mean, it's kind of a fine line, but I mean, sure, whatever, I guess.
Okay.
You know? But yeah, so that's the game. I'm looking forward to, I'm sure the scenarios get harder. In fact, I know the scenarios get harder.
Sure.
But it's cute. It does support, you know, a bunch of players. So I'm sure that we'll add some people to that and we'll play some more. We are going to talk about this game a lot more. We've already released our holiday gift guide, so it's not going to go into that. But, you know, it might be an honorable mention or something like that. I have no idea. It's really, It's just nice.
Yeah.
Probably took us, I want to say, 15 minutes to play. Probably more with more people, but, I mean, your limit is the deck of, like, character cards or whatever they are, that are order cards that are in the deck. You know, you're going through the whole thing. So, I mean, it's going to slow down if you have five people as opposed to two people, because five people have to take their turns before the customer shift. But I think the action count goes down when that's the case.
Okay.
So it does balance it out a little bit.
All right. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I said this week I'm going to focus on games that I've been wanting to play for a while for one reason or another.
Sure.
So in a completely different vein, I sat down with complete strangers and played The Chameleon from Big Potato Games.
Oh, cool. Okay. I mean, I've obviously seen this all over the place.
So The Chameleon is very much like Spyfall.
Okay.
You pass out these cards. They're all secret. And one of them says, "You are the Chameleon." And all the rest have a sort of grid on them with two dice. There's an 8-sided die and a traditional 6-sided die. You also pull out a grid that goes in front of everybody on the table. It has a category on it and 16 things that fit in that category. So once all the cards are passed out, somebody rolls the dice and then everybody checks their secret card to find out what that die roll corresponds to on the grid. So unlike Spyfall, you're not trying to like secretly pass out locations and make sure that the chameleon card is mixed in. It's a little bit smoother to deal with.
Well, it sounds like you're still passing out cards and one of them is the chameleon, which is mixed in.
You are, but those are always the same. I think they have a blue deck and a green deck as far as that goes. But the main difference comes in all of these cards that have the grid with a category and 16 things that fit in the category.
Okay,
and there's a huge number of those. So the goal in The Chameleon is you give a one-word clue that fits the thing. You want it to be true and reasonable, but vague enough that the chameleon can't figure it out, so that when the chameleon has to give their clue, they give themselves away by giving a clue that doesn't fit.
Right. Yeah, I get it.
So everybody gives their one-word clue, and then you do 3, 2, 1, point at the chameleon. The chameleon can only truly win if nobody picks them at all. If even one person says they're the chameleon, they did not win that round. But they can still get a point if they can guess what the thing was that we were all cluing.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's it. And it was a ton of fun.
Isn't that a fairly big box?
It is, but it's because the grid for everybody to look at, the grid cards for everybody to look at are pretty oversized, which makes it something where you can actually sit 8 people around a table and everybody can see the grid.
Okay. All right.
All right. Two last quick ones, games that I've been wanting to play but haven't played before. One that I didn't even quite realize I wanted to play it until I had a chance was Skulls of Sedlec, which was a button-shy
game
that came out maybe a year ago.
Are they currently doing a Kickstarter for an expansion?
I think it's like somebody was telling me it's like the third expansion to the game.
Well, but I think that, I mean, we just Kickstarted Unsurmountable, and I think I'm seeing it in the emails.
Yeah, I didn't even really know that I wanted to play it until somebody I was with was like, "Oh yeah, Button Shy," you know, because I pulled out Tussie Mussie, and he's like, "Well, I got a couple of Button Shy games with me. Have you ever played Skulls of Sedlec?" And I was like, "No, actually, I haven't. Show me." So that one, it's kind of a tile placement sort of thing. You're making a pyramid of cards but every card is like a domino with two skulls, quote unquote, on it, representing some kind of like person type.
Okay.
And every person type scores in a different way. So like priests give you 2 points if they're the only priest in a row, yeah. You know, and yeah. Other things want to touch each other and whatever. The other interesting thing is that the way you get these cards, you lay out all of the cards that you're going to use for the game in 6 face down stacks. And then on your turn, you either take one face up card and add it to your hand, or play a card from your hand into your pyramid, or you take 2 face down cards from the stacks and flip them both over, and then you must choose one of them.
Okay. Is this still a 19 card game?
Technically, yes.
Before any expansions, it was?
Before any expansions, it was.
Okay. Yeah. The guy who
played it with me had enough expansions that he was like, yeah, it's a 36 card, 18 card game.
Yeah. I mean, even that's not much, though.
But you can play up to 3 with the 18 cards.
That's not bad.
Yeah. That was really neat and actually makes me want to give it a second look and maybe think about picking it up sometime.
Oh my gosh, so many button shy games.
Worth it.
I need to buy you a bandolier.
Maybe. The last one that we'll talk about this week is Whirling Witchcraft. So this is brand new. It's from AEG. And I've been seeing pictures of it all over like Instagram and stuff because it's got great table presence. You have these little cardboard cauldrons as part of the game. It is a very mean game.
Okay, it is not coming into the Family Gamers household. Check.
Our family would not enjoy it, which is why I'm even more glad that I got to play it at a con. I loved it, and I will jump at the chance to play it again, but I do not want a copy for ourselves. In this game, you are crafting potions, basically. But your goal in crafting these potions is to push so many ingredients over to the person on your right that their ingredient storage overflows.
Okay.
Anytime they have a section overflow, all of those extra cubes come back to you and become points for you.
Okay.
The game ends when somebody meets or exceeds 5 points.
Okay.
So that tells you, like, it takes a lot of effort to get the overflow going. So this is a big simultaneous play game, which is nice. You have a hand of cards. You can only play one of these spell cards down in a round. And then once everybody has picked and played a spell card, then you can activate as many of your spells as you're able to, taking ingredients from your little storage board and putting them as the inputs to these spells, and then taking the outputs from the center of the table. All of the outputs go into your cauldron. Pretty much there's a couple of small variations. And then you pass the cauldron over.
To the next player?
To the next player.
Okay.
So again, that's a simultaneous thing. Everybody is passing the cauldrons and you must take the ingredients, put them on your board.
Okay.
And pass back any that didn't fit. Because those become points.
Okay.
There's just a little spot on your storage board of like, these are my points. There's a couple of other more asymmetric things, but that's the core of the game. And so it's one of those where, I mean, it's intentionally mean.
Okay.
But it's really neat trying to pick the right new spells to add to make sure that you can give yourself enough slack while also trying to see what the person on your right already has a lot of and see if you can give them even more.
And you only need 5 ingredient overflows?
Yes.
Seems like that would go quickly.
I mean, we played twice, and it took about 10 to 15 minutes each time.
Okay. Yeah, that seems about right. Yep.
Like 4 or 5 rounds, and like I said, the rounds are simultaneous play, so they only take a couple of minutes.
Mm.
I have to admit, I also enjoyed this because the second time we played, I managed to finagle it just right. I was frustrated that I couldn't get the guy next to me to overflow at all, and then he overflowed 9 in one turn. I won that game.
Yeah.
I think the final scores were like 9, 5, 2, and 0.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. And if your family does not mind a little bit of lighthearted meanness, I think it's a great game.
Cool.
So just as a little teaser for next week, this is an example of I played a lot of games this weekend that are better at three, four or more players and kind of stink at two or aren't even playable at two.
Right.
So those kind of games also don't often have a place in our family unless they're real simple and easy.
That makes sense.
Yep.
All right. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we take our break? And then when we come back, we are going to hear from Chris Ronan about geocaching.
It's going to be great.
It is. And in between, we are going to hear about Hero Hockey,
Yay!
Which is our snap review last week.
We'll be right back.
So, Nitra, I don't know how much time you spent in arcades as a kid. Did you spend any?
A little.
A little bit. All right. Well, they used to have these really cool machines that were kind of like air hockey tables, I guess, but they had bubbles over the top, and it was...
Oh, and the little guys had hockey sticks.
Yeah, they had hockey sticks. It was kind of like a foosball kind of thing. You remember those, obviously?
Yeah.
Well, did you ever want to take one of those home? Well, now you can. This is a snap review for Hero Hockey. Hero Hockey is a two-player dexterity battle.
It's published by Asmodee in the United States, and a game takes maybe 10 minutes. Anybody can play this game.
All right, so Anisha, let's talk about the art in Hero Hockey. What do you think about the art in this game?
There's some art. There's really nothing special. You have two characters. There's a field of play. There's a nice insert that sits down into the field.
Mm-hmm. And there's these kind of clips on the sides that work for score markers. Honestly, they don't work very well. The tolerances for the plastic molding are not that great. We'll talk a little bit about those later, but let's talk about the mechanics. So, Anitra, how do you play this game? How do you play Hero Hockey?
I don't think Hero Hockey could be simpler if it tried. Each player sets up their hero with a little magnet holder underneath the table. Then go to it. Both players try to knock the ball into the goal on the other side to score a point.
You also score a point if your opponent loses control of their guy. If the magnet slips off or whatever and you can't get it back, like if the guy falls into the goal, falls over, and you just can't get it back on. Sometimes you can. Or if your guy gets knocked over to the opposite side of the playing field, you can't really go get them. So in that case, your opponent would score a point. And so the first player who gets the 6 points wins.
So that's it. Andrew, what did we expect from Hero Hockey?
Well, it is impossible to not think of the game Clask when playing Hero Hockey. I mean, the legs of the table, it looks like the same kind of shape. So I expected something like that, where you're, you know, moving your little connected piece around underneath and you're playing kind of like air hockey.
I expected this to be a fast-moving, great spectator game, and it's exactly that. In our family, we heard that familiar call of, I got next, over and over. This game is so much fun, and it's so easy to get into. So what surprised you about this game?
Well, I mean, we mentioned the tolerances before, right? The plastic table is not flat. I mean, it's obviously kind of supposed to be, but it was definitely made to be cost-effective with cost concessions in mind. If you're kind of moving slowly, you're going to be subject to the lack of flatness on the table. The ball's going to roll around, and you're going to watch it change direction based on the table. I didn't really expect it to make that much of a difference. And when you're moving around like crazy, it doesn't.
Like kids do.
Right. But there's going to be times when that ball's rolling toward the goal, like in slow motion, you're like, no! But for some reason, because it's not flat, it might like roll around the back of it, and everyone's like,
ah!
Mentioning that, I really like that the goal doesn't go all the way to the back, like in air hockey where it's got that slot.
Or foosball, right? Or whatever, yeah.
Or whatever. The number of times the ball rolled behind the goal and everybody started yelling, it happened a lot more than I would have expected.
I agree.
So, Anitra, do we recommend this game?
I mean, how could you not recommend this for a family? At $30, this is a great family gift, and I guarantee it'll be played immediately after opening it on Christmas Day or whenever you open your holiday presents. It's a fantastic age equalizer, and it's just fun for everyone.
Yes, there are imperfections. The clips stink. The table is not flat. But at the end of the day, the game is just fun. And that's what it's supposed to be. And that's what it delivers.
Exactly.
So I'm not even going to ask you, Anitra. I'm just going to tell you, we're going to rate Hero Hockey 4 hockey bat stick things out of 5.
And that's Hero Hockey
in a snap. All right, and we're back from our break. So as we mentioned, first half of the show, It's another episode of Beyond Board Gaming.
Yeah.
And this is going to be super fun. This is when we take a step away from our normal board gaming obsession topic thing. And we talk about something else that we like that we think is pertinent to families.
Yeah. So even though I might love to talk about, you know, my obsession with science fiction, that's probably less appropriate for families. So,
well, we just fit science fiction nerdiness inside of everything else that we do.
I mean, that's true. Right.
But okay, so this week on the show, we have Chris Ronan on, who is a senior PR manager for geocaching.com. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys?
Great. It's nice to meet you.
Yes, it's nice to meet you.
Very good to meet you.
So geocaching is this thing that is, it's kind of always been on my radar. I was a Boy Scout growing up, so like I like outdoor stuff, and the older my kids get, the less I want them in front of the television. Like it's almost funny, as we get older, we're like, oh man, I really am becoming my parents, you know?
Well, it's funny, when you first mentioned geocaching to me a couple of years ago, I'm like, that sounds like orienteering, but less hard.
Yeah. Well, okay, so before we kind of get like too far into this, this is something that I've been interested in, and we finally, I got off my tail and I got my act together to take our boys geocaching. Can you talk a little bit about what geocaching is, Chris?
Of course. So geocaching at its most basic is a game in which somebody hides a container for other people to find. That container is called a geocache. It is placed somewhere in the real world, and the person who hides that geocache posts the coordinates and details about the geocache through geocaching.com. And then other people can use the geocaching app or geocaching.com or their GPS device to go out and try to find that container. And once they find it, there is a logbook inside or a log sheet that they will sign. And then they rehide the container the way it was hidden, and then they can share their experience online using our app or the website.
So, I mean, just in this last week, we had this whole big, like, Facebook, or I guess they're Meta now, right? This whole big Meta thing about augmented reality, and you can kind of create your own spaces and do all this. We don't need any of that crap. We should go outside. It's so much easier that way.
I mean, yeah, part of the experience is that it's not always perfect.
Which is fine.
But like, that's built into this experience of like, hey, you know, we found this geocache and it wasn't exactly where we expected it to be. And it's all wet inside. That's not great, but it's been raining, so it makes sense. Yeah, and we leave a little note, afterwards through the app and the website to say, you might want to come check this and re-waterproof it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Geocaching is a very human game. It's and there is a huge amount of variety of geocaches that are hidden, and a variety of difficulty levels, a variety of terrain. You know, for instance,
yes.
some people like to stick to, you know, a flat paved surface in an urban environment. Other people like to go out on kayaks or use climbing equipment or, much more adventurous stuff. And the game can accommodate all of those possibilities, which is one of the great things about it.
Yeah, I mean, we finally got the kids out again this summer, and we started easy. You know, we started with something that ended up being hidden in the shells underneath like a street light. You know how there's like the shells
in
that
like
kind of go
lot,
that go
right?
over the bolts. You would lift it up, and there's like a little geocache kind of stuck under it. I think the enterprising geocachers probably bring like a package of Ziploc bags with them so that they can like repackage something a little bit better, you know, and donate a Ziploc bag to the cause or something like that. But when we first did this, the boys were like, what is dad making us do on Saturday afternoon? This is going to be lame, blah, 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 blah.
Why would we want to be outside when we could be playing video games?
Right. But, I do want to talk about the app, because it really was what finally got me, you know, going. The place that we went, there was the geocache and there was a hint. And so you'd go there and you're like, well, what do I do now? And I'm like, oh, let's look at this hint. And I showed the boys the hint. And then instantly, we had watched National Treasure the week before. And it was just like you flipped a switch with these boys. And they were scouring the place until they found it. And I mean,
It was this like rinky dink. You know what makes a perfect geocache is like those Talenti gelato containers.
Oh yeah.
Like that's a perfect geocache size little thing. And that's kind of what this was. And they found it. And you would have thought that they discovered like some lost Mayan expedition or something. I mean, it was hooping and hollering and screaming and yelling. It was an absolute blast.
That's very cool to hear. And it's, for somebody like myself who's been geocaching for over 10 years now, it's really nice to be reminded of experiences like that, because when you've been doing it a long time, it's like any hobby or any game that you play, that you maybe forget the wonder that mm-hmm. you experienced when you first started.
Yeah.
And it takes a little more to impress me now than it did in the early days. But again, it's like, in fact, you mentioned lifting the little cover on the light post. That's a very common geocache hide style. We actually have an abbreviation for it. It's LPC for light post cache. And they are derided by many people in the community, because once you've been caching for long enough, you're just like, ugh, another LPC. But I can remember the first time I found one of those, and I looked around that light post for 10 minutes. Not realizing that those mm-hmm. covers lift up. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And now 10 years later, I'm like, oh, another LPC. but again, it's like I said before, it's the beauty of, yes, they can be little tiny, what we call bison tubes or pill bottles or anything like that, all the way up to, I just spent a day in a town in North Dakota called Gilby. It's about, I don't know, 20 minutes outside of Grand Forks, North Dakota, where there's a gentleman there that has hidden, I don't know, 50 to 100 geocaches. Each one of them either has some sort of an electronic component or something else that's mechanical and very creative. And wow. I was blown away. I spent like every one I came to, I was with my wife, and every one we were like, oh my gosh, I've never seen anything like this before. Mm-hmm. And so again, there's that spectrum, you know, of mm-hmm. yes, there's some that are very simple, but then there's others that are just spectacularly creative. And that's what's kept me going with the game for as long as I have, and what made me want to work for the company that helps keep it going.
Very cool. So we've been dancing around this, but let's talk a little bit more about the app, because having a geocaching app makes it so much easier for families to do this now right. that everybody has smartphones with GPS and stuff in them. Do you have any idea how many people use the geocaching app?
Well, I can say that there are over 3 million active geocachers in the world, and the vast majority of them do use an app to go geocache. As you alluded to, it does make it significantly easier. When the game first started in the year 2000, you needed a dedicated GPS device. That was the only way to go geocaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would print out your sheets of paper with the information, and you would type in the coordinates into your GPS, and off you went. Well, now you can download the app for free. You can, open it up. It knows where you are. It shows you where the geocaches are near you. You mm-hmm. hit navigate and off you go. So it's made the game significantly more accessible. There are still a lot of people, and I'm one of them, who still likes to use my GPS device much of the time. But if I'm just, on the fly, or I just want to go out, find one geocache close to my house, the app just makes it so easy to do that.
Mm. Sure.
Well, one of the things I love about geocaching in general is the ability that you have to feel so much more connected. Like, people talk about the internet makes people feel connected, but then you hear all this stuff about like, well, social media isn't really social because, you're kind of putting like your fake best, version of yourself online and all this stuff. And you don't really, you don't really interact. Yeah. And I mean, I guess you're not really interacting with people when you geocache either, but like remember when I was commuting via mass transit, and one of the things I said was like, it made me feel like I was actually part of a greater something. Like, even though I was sitting on a bus with a bunch of people I didn't know, know, or a train with a bunch of people I didn't know. Like, I'm still like part of humanity instead of like going from my house, you know, cube to my car cube to my office cube to my car cube to my house cube again, right? And so just kind of having these sort of like almost tangential interactions with like physical real things, I really, really like that part of it. And one thing that a lot of geocaches do is they'll be, you know, like we'll take a couple of like, I don't know, around here we did like little erasers of that were shapes of like little ghosts or little whatever. And we would put one in a geocache that we found and take something out of that geocache. And then we go to another geocache and we take the thing that we found and put it in that one. And so there's a physical, like tangible give and take to it as well, which is really, really neat.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And kind of it speaks to the community aspect of this game, and that a real person created this experience for other people to have. And in most cases, they're wanting to bring you to a place that they find interesting or that they think is worth your time. And I know for me, I've discovered places in my own town, even in my own neighborhood, that I didn't know about before. And it was a geocache that brought me there. Another aspect of the game that is a lot of fun is event geocaches. So it's literally just somebody hosts an event, a gathering of people. And of course, that's been a little tougher over the last year and a half to 2 years, but there are thousands of events every year around the world that people host, and they can be anything. It's just like physical geocaches in that there's a wide variety. They can be anything from a quick 30-minute just meet and greet at a local park to a very elaborate day-long affair with hundreds of people that come. So that's one of the things is really special about geocaching is the community of people and the chance to either, you know, yes, meet people sometimes, which is great, but kind of as you alluded to, just seeing something that someone else felt was special and visiting a place that somebody else thought, hey, this is someplace that you might not have known about. Let me introduce you to it.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, our world, I think, is so much bigger and also smaller in various ways than we really acknowledge that it is, right? And so, just like you said, you leave your house, you take a left turn out of your driveway, you go down, I don't know, 300 yards, you take a right turn, and that's how you get to the main drag where you do all your stuff. Well, what if you took a left turn that second time? It's a whole neighborhood that you didn't even know existed, and there might be cool things. Like, we have this weird looking mid-century house that's down the street from us or something like that. And it's just, it's this just odd house, but it's cool looking. And we rarely go down that street, but every time we do, we're like, oh, don't forget to look at that house. You know what I mean? And there's so much in the world. And I really think that in a time that we're in right now where it's all about the destination, right? It's just like, exploration doesn't happen anymore. It just, I mean, largely, it's, you know, kids don't go outside and just kind of look around and see what's up, right? And I mean, even scavenger hunts are nowhere near as popular now as they were when we were kids.
I see more with scavenger hunts now, but maybe that's just
because really?
I follow mom blogs and stuff, and I'm like, I don't have the energy to set that up.
Well, fortunately, you don't have to. You can just download the geocache.
I know, right?
But geocaches really do tap into a lot of the same energy that things like scavenger hunts do, I think.
Yeah, I agree. That's a lot more collaborative in that way, too, because it's not, as we just alluded to, it's not one person being like, all right, I'm going to set up all the clues and exactly the path. And if you want to do that through geocaching, you can. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, I'm going to add this one thing and then I'm going to go look for other ones, that's fine.
You could totally do that, right?
It's such a so much more collaborative experience that you're doing this with other people, both separated in space and also sometimes in time. I found some geocaches that are 10 years old or more, and they're still being maintained. So it's like, oh, hey, this has been here for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but the vast majority of geocaches are what we call traditional geocaches. It's just one place that you go to and you find a container. But then there are multi-cache geocaches, and those are ones where there are multiple locations that you visit and basically gather clues as you're going along that will lead you to the eventual final container. And then something that I think we you were hoping to talk about was Adventure Lab, which is something that it's a new app that is in development, and we've been working on it for the last few years. And Adventure Lab is a virtual caching experience. So in that there are no physical containers, but you are still out in the real world. So unlike traditional geocaching, no physical container, and there are what are called locations within an adventure. So you might have an adventure. I'm just trying to think of one that I've done recently. I was in a town in Oregon where somebody had created an adventure with locations in the downtown area. So there were five locations that took you to different places of historical significance to to the beginnings of that town. And so each location told a little different part of the story of how this town began. And I could have done just one, but there were five and they were all within walking distance of each other. So you just go to a location. Generally, this is the way adventures work. You go to a location, you find a code word or something, you enter it in, and it says, hey, congratulations, you found that one. And then you go off to the next location within the adventure. So Adventure Lab is just kind of the next piece of the evolution of what we're trying to do, which is make everyone an adventurer and have an adventure in every location.
So we have around us some things in the geocaching app, which are kind of like that. They are kind of like these like adventure kind of thing. They're multi-site historical geocache adventures. I don't know what you would call them. And I love this idea. We talk a lot on the Family Gamers podcast about game schooling or about, you know, what do homeschool outings look like or field trips or whatever.
And lately they haven't looked like much when everything was closed down.
Right. But I mean, something like this, you know, you don't have to go to the museum to do an outdoor geocache, right? Like, right, you don't have to check in with a person to get some information to go do an outdoor thing because it's all built in. Yeah. And it sounds like Adventure Lab is kind of like what they shoehorned into the geocaching app.
Well, yeah, except it's a totally different app.
Well, right.
But no, it's a different way to experience an adventure. And for a lot of people, it could be more approachable maybe than geocaching. I mean, I think, as we've talked about already at length, we do think there is a way for everybody to experience geocaching, regardless of what kind of terrain or how difficult you might want the experience to be. But Adventure Lab does tend to be something where, again, you're not having to go and find a physical container. You might not be, you know, there's experiences all of us geocachers have had where it's you'll get to a location where you're trying to find a physical geocache and, you know, there's a bunch of people around, what we call muggles in the geocaching game. And you're like, oh, well, gosh, if I try to find this, I might look suspicious or somebody might see it and then I give it away and whatever. Well, with Adventure Lab, there is none of that. You know, you're just going around and generally looking for a phrase or a word or something that you input into the app that, you know, counts as your find, quote unquote, in that way. So, and there are over 30,000 public adventures worldwide right now. Wow. And that number is growing all the time.
Very cool.
You mentioned 30,000 adventures. I found the geocaching app and decided, you know, we'll give this a shot, but I would say I downloaded it kind of on a lark, and I was stunned, absolutely shocked when I opened that thing up and it was just filled with, I think, yellow stars. Do you have any idea how many geocaches are registered in the system? Like, how many are out there?
There are about 3.2 million worldwide.
Oh my wow.
Gosh, that is so many. Yeah. I mean, anybody who's listening to this, I would say, like, the app is called Geocaching. It's not, you know, hard to find. Is it on Android also? I have it on iOS.
Yes. Okay. It is.
It's free to download. There is like a premium tier, but you can download the app for free and then just pull up where you live. And you, I guarantee you, if you live in a place where you ever see another human being ever, you will be, hey, you know, you will be surprised at just how many geocaches there are near you.
I think we'll change that to our branding. If you see another human being ever where you are, there's probably a geocache.
You know what? You can have that one for free.
No, that's, you are absolutely right. And I had the same experience when I first started, where you just, it's like having this little world that's been going on that you had no idea about. And I think it's probably like that to some degree with any hobby, you know, where, and there's lots of stuff where people are, lots of people are playing a game and I have no idea that they're doing it. And then you discover it and you're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that this was going on right under my nose.
Right.
But especially, but there's something a little different about, even I, like I've got this, a couple of bike routes that I do pretty regularly and I don't always open up the app when I'm out biking, but then one day I'll open up the app and say, oh, I'm going to go look for a geocache today. And I'll realize, oh my gosh, there's been one that I've biked past every day for like a year and I had no idea, you know, and
yeah,
and there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hidden in plain sight most of the time.
Yep.
So we mentioned the app, which should be fairly easy to get. Do you have any tips for somebody who's just getting started with geocaching other than, you know, download the app, open it up and see what's there?
Yeah, I well, that's a good place to start. But I think that one of the main things that we try to encourage people to do is to focus on the caches that have a lower difficulty level or a lower terrain level. So When a person hides a geocache, they assign it a difficulty and terrain rating between 1 and 5, 1 being the easiest and 5 being the most difficult. So if I was advising a new player, I would say look for a 1-1 or 1.5, 1.5, something like that, so that you have a good first experience. You really don't want to start with a 5-5 and... You know, you're picking the most difficult terrain, the hardest difficulty rating, and then you're just going to be maybe frustrated because when you find your first couple, especially those easier ones, you'll start to get a feel for how the game is working, and you'll, like, you know, you'll discover that maybe there's a common style of hiding in your area, and once you found, like I said, a handful of them, then you can start advancing towards some of the and challenging yourself a little bit more. But again, even if you start to challenge yourself and you do not find what we call a DNF, did not find, if you have a couple of those, you can always back it off and try a couple more of those easy ones and until you get more comfortable. So
sure.
That's one of the pieces of advice that I would give. I would also suggest that people look for events in your area. It's a great way to not only meet other people, but trade information, learn about the game, and just connect with the community in your area. And beyond events, which you can search for within the app or on our website, you can also look for geocaching groups in your area, because chances are there's probably one either in your town or in your state that has a Facebook group or a website or something like that where people are talking about the game, and it's a very welcoming community. So those are a couple other pieces of advice that I would give to people.
All right. Awesome. So we talked a little bit about Adventure Lab already and kind of how it's a little bit different from geocaching. You said this is something that's like in development, but you also said there, I think you said there's 30,000 adventures in the world. What's the plan for Adventure Lab?
Well, the plan is to continue to add features, continue to gather feedback. This has largely been the geocaching community that has helped to get more experiences out there. And so we've taken a very thoughtful approach with this app and wanting it to have as many of the features that the community is asking for before we launch it even more widely. You know, I don't even know that we've technically had the big splashy red carpet rollout for it. But the geocaching community has been extremely helpful, not just in getting the adventures out there, but in helping us to understand what kind of tools the creators would like to have, what kind of tools the finders want to have. And the app is getting better and better, and we have just incredibly high hopes for it here in the years to come.
So geocaching is free. I know Adventure Lab is free to download. I haven't played a lot with it. Is it free to participate and stuff in the same way geocaching is?
It definitely is. Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, I mean, we talk about a lot of things with regards to our kids and stuff like this. You know, geocaching is a great way for kids to participate in something. And then if they want to create something of their own, What's it like for someone who thinks they might want to create their first geocache? What's that process kind of look like? Because that's totally something that kids can work with a parent to do.
Yeah. So what we advise is we suggest that people try to find at least 20 geocaches before they try to hide one of their own, just so you have a better idea for, well, what you like about geocaches, and then also just some of the nuts and bolts about it, you know, like what's the best kind of container to use and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And then once you do, we have a hide a cache page on our website that has links to, you know, various blog articles, for instance, where you can get some tips. And then, of course, the geocaching guidelines that you'll want to read before you try to hide anything. So that you understand that you're playing within all the necessary rules and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then once you've done all those things and you find a place where there is not another geocache located and you decide that you want to hide something there, you know, you essentially get the coordinates, go to our website, input the coordinates, give the cache a name and a description, a hint possibly, and once you submit it for publication, it will be reviewed by a volunteer in your area who will check to make sure that it complies with all the guidelines. And if there are any issues, they'll talk to you about it. You'll have a back and forth. And then hopefully, eventually, it'll get to a point where it's live and other people can use the app or the website to go out and find it.
Cool.
That's pretty fun. I know if I ever did that, I would definitely be checking my own geocaches to see who has found it and how many signatures it has and all sorts of stuff like that. I feel like that's something that our family would do.
Yes, it is.
And that's one of the things that geocache creators love the most about. There are some people that enjoy hiding geocaches much more than even finding them because they love to read the logs that people post on the app and the website, and they love to hear about the experience that people had with finding their cache. And it's certainly one of the fun aspects of the game is being a cache hider.
Oh, we keep talking about how geocaching is a game, and it is, but this is a board game podcast.
It is a board game podcast.
We're going to have to ask, do you play board games?
When I was a kid, I did a lot more. but and the reason I say that is it's just my wife and I here at our house. And so a lot of games you'll see something and think, oh, that seems like fun. And then you realize it's four or more players or something that. And so if I, you know, I'm more of an old school probably person with board games. I mean, loved Monopoly and some of the more traditional ones. I mean, I see you guys have a whole shelves full of games. And like I say, oftentimes, and we do have a very active gaming community at our company.
Awesome. Excellent.
There are when our office was completely fully open, and now it's more partially open, but we had game nights where you would have people bringing in board games, and I'm just always fascinated by how much more is out there. I mean, when I was a kid, you guys probably have talked about this 1,000 times on your show, but you know, when I was a kid, you go to the store and there was just the row of games and that was all there was. And now there's just such an amazing array of them. Mm-hmm. And, and by the way, there is a geocaching board game.
Oh, have you played it?
I have played it. It's called Cash Me If You Can. So, like that.
As a dad, right? I appreciate the dad joke in that.
Exactly. Yeah. So even us geocachers have a board game that we can turn to if the weather's really bad and we don't want to go outside.
Excellent. All right. Well, it is getting a little raw in the Northeast. You're at a similar enough latitude that I think it's probably getting a little cold where you are as well. But certainly a little bit further south of here, there is plenty more time. I mean, you could just put coats on, whatever, deal with it. Plenty of time to get out there.
Yeah, until there's snow and hard freeze, we can still go out there.
Yeah, and check out some geocaches. Chris, I mean, thanks so much for coming on and just kind of talking about this thing that you know, we're falling in love with and you've obviously been in love with for a super long time. We really appreciate you coming on and talking about geocaching.
It's my pleasure, and I'm excited to hear that you guys are enjoying your early experiences with it.
Absolutely. So if people have more questions, because I'm sure that we didn't think of them all, Where can people find out more information? Where can people reach out on maybe on social media to ask some of that stuff or just learn more?
Yeah, so geocaching.com is obviously our website, but we're very active on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and recently on TikTok. So there's a lot of places. There's a lot of places that you can find us, and we're always trying to share fun stories about geocaching and tips and stories from the community. So come and join us.
All right.
Awesome. Cool.
And Anitra, where can people find us on the internet?
Well, our website is thefamilygamers.com. And you can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and yes, TikTok.
We are also on TikTok.
At Family Gamers AA for Andrew and Anitra.
If you would like to talk about geocaching in the Family Gamers community, go to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right into our Facebook community. And we can tell you all about our experiences with it. And I'm sure that I'm sure there are many geocachers in our community already that would love to talk about it.
I'm sure. Yeah.
For the most direct method, you can always email us, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Check out our Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise, t-shirts, hoodies, stuff like that at thefamilygamers.com/merch.
Maybe even wear the hoodie while you go geocaching.
Oh, you could wear a hoodie while you go. She's smart.
Yeah. please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, tell your friends about it, and leave us a review wherever you subscribe, whether that's Apple Podcast or whatever else.
All right. The Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
All right. Well, I think that's going to be it for this week. Thank you so much for coming on, Chris. And thank you for sharing your love for geocaching with us.
Yeah, it's been great.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. So that's going to be it for us. That's going to be it for Chris. So until next week, everybody, play games with your kids.